All right, I call the Senate Resource Committee to order. Today's Wednesday, March 20th. It's 3:31 p.m. Present today are Senator Kawasaki, Vice Chair Willikowski, Co-Chair Geisel, myself, Bishop, Senator Kaufman, Senator Dunbar, and Klayman. I'm sure we'll be along in a bit. First up today, and I want to also thank Sav for being here today and Mr. Williams. Today's agenda is 168, compensation for wrongfully seized game. We'll take an at ease after that, and then Senator Geisel will be driving the rest of the day. So, 168, compensation for wrongfully seized game by Senator Bjorkman. Senator Geisel, I believe we have a motion for a yes.
We do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee adopt this. The Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 168, Work Order 33, LS1071-R, as our working document.
All right. I'll object for the purposes of discussion. And Ms. Richters, would you like to present the changes?
Thank you. For the record, Ann Richters, staff to Senator Click Bishop. There are five main changes to point out today. The first is the updated title, which was a conforming change. In Section 1, there are three changes. The first changes the compensation source from the department to the state. The second names animals that are eligible for restitution. And the third defines compensation eligibility to those who are later found not guilty of violating the statute or regulation, or if the conviction is overturned on appeal or otherwise set aside. The final change is in Section 2. It's a new section. It allows for monetary compensation to be paid to an existing statute, AS1605-925B, and the amounts on that existing statute have been adjusted for inflation since about the year 2000.
So, okay, Senator Klayman has joined us. I said you'd be along, and you are here in the flesh now, so good. Welcome. All right. Any other? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I'm understanding something here as I'm reading this. The original version, I believe, had talk about using the price of beef as sort of a measurement for compensation. Has that been removed?
That has been removed. If you look at page 2, starting on line 3, the animals are listed there with the dollar amount of restitution that would be provided.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. I remove my objection. Any further objection?
Oh, no objection, but I have a question.
Sure.
What happens if there's meat seized on a suspected violation and then there's no prosecution at all? They're neither found not guilty nor guilty, but the case just goes away.
I believe we have Alpheus online from Ledge Legal.
We do. Mr. Bullard.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Resource Committee. Through the chair, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. Was there a question?
Senator Klayman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Bullard. Let's take a case of a person who has the game they take is seized because there's a suspected violation, but then for whatever reason, the prosecution just declines to prosecute, but they've still seized the game and the game is no longer in condition to give back to the person, but there is no not guilty finding. Basically, the case just goes away. What happens then?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, without a conviction, there would be no compensation provided.
Follow up. But Mr. Bullard, if they're found guilty, there's no compensation. This is about a not guilty finding in which they get compensation, but here you don't have a not guilty finding, you just have they declined to prosecute.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, if the bill's terms provide that if there is, let me make sure that I'm looking at the right bill. If that it requires a conviction to be overturned or set aside. So if the department decides not to prosecute, then there will be no opportunity for an individual to receive compensation from the state.
That's what I thought. Thank you very much.
Senator Giesel. Senator Dunbar, sorry, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name of the person from the department online.
Alpheus Bullard.
Mr. Bullard, and this might be...
Legislative legal.
Oh, Leslie Lee, okay. I think I need someone from the department or the Department of Law to answer this question, if there's anyone available.
Department of Law?
Okay. Well, I guess my question is this. So we are increasing the amounts on the, you know, the CS is going to increase the monetary amounts in Section 2. And it occurs to me that it's probably more often that the state is found to be in, I'd say I don't know, is it more often the state is found to be in the right when they prosecute these things versus they wrongfully seize the game? And if they're in the right and they successfully do these prosecutions and we are increasing the penalties, is the thinking that this is actually a positive fiscal note, if that makes sense, because we're going to collect more damages? Are you tracking what I'm saying? Because this is such an unusual thing where they pay monetary damages, but I don't think it is unusual to fine people for doing this wrongly, and we're increasing those penalties. So I don't see I know it picked up a fiscal note, but I'm not seeing. All I see is the original fiscal note. Has the department provided a differing fiscal note?
Go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, the Department of Fish and Game submitted an indeterminate fiscal note,
yeah,
and have indicated that if version R is adopted by the committee, they would reconsider that based on the new committee substitute.
Okay. Is there anyone from Department of Fish and Game available to comment on this?
No. We can set this bill aside.
No, I'm not going to try to unnecessarily delay Senator Bjorkman's bill. It's going to finance. I think it's an interesting question. This might have a positive fiscal impact if it's more frequent that they actually get these fines versus doing the compensation.
This is restitution.
Well, no, but they do it by, am I misreading this section? The section is, in addition to a penalty imposed under A of this section or any other penalty for violation of this title, a person who is convicted of unlawfully taking an animal listed in subsection may be ordered by the court to pay restitution to the state. And then that's the, so I wonder if it's more frequent the person pays restitution to the state than vice versa. So anyway.
You're thinking it might be a positive fiscal note.
Yes.
That's a good question.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, could we ask the bill sponsor? He might have some information about which is more prevalent, convictions or.
Yeah, we can. Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you very much. If I understand the question correctly, but first, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, State Senator representing Senate District D, the central and northern portions of the Kenai Peninsula. I think most of the cases that we are dealing with that brought this kind of causal action for the legislation are dismissed. And so I think that Senator Klayman's question and point is well taken.
Can I ask a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
So I like the way the CS, basically it says, here's the damages, here's the restitution you have to pay to the state. But if the state is wrong, this is what they have to pay to you. And I think there's some fairness to that. And we're significantly increasing that number, though. We're going from, for example, $3,000 to $5,400 for muskox. And I realize that the cases that come to you that, you know, that you hear about are the ones that are wrongly done, but where the state is found to be in the right. Do you have any sense of how often that happens?
I understand your question now, Senator Dunbar. No, I don't know how many violations occur every year that would lead to someone paying the restitution according to that schedule. And until I got that data, I wouldn't want to say definitively one way or another, but you may be on something.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilikowski, then Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Alpheus Bullard, getting back to the question from Senator Klayman, if we add this section, 197, are we saying to the state that there is no need to compensate a person if they do seize someone's moose or bear, bison, and then they later dismiss the charges? Or is there some sort of common law or other provision that would require them to compensate the individual?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. My understanding of how this provision would work is that the way that it reads would be the way that it operates, and there is no common law principle or other statute that would require any different result.
But there is some sort of, isn't there some sort of provision now that requires them to compensate someone whose game was seized inappropriately?
Senator Wilikowski, not of which I'm aware.
All right, so that's, if I could, that may be something, an oversight that we need, would you'd recommend maybe we fix in Finance Committee or somewhere?
I have one question for Alpheus. Notwithstanding the conversation, does a judge have the authority to tell the department to pay in this scenario?
I mean when the case is dismissed?
Yes.
As opposed to a not guilty finding?
Great.
To the chair, through the chair, you know, every situation is different. I don't know of any universal principle that would apply in a variety of these cases that would cause a judge to require that. That said, the specific facts of a particular case could result in the judge making that determination.
Brief for these. Back on the record. So I have removed my objection. Is there any further objection to the CS?
Not an objection, but a comment.
Sure.
I would just note that my sense of the sponsor's intent of the bill, and I would tend to join that intent, that the instance of a dismissed case in which they're not prosecuting is also one that probably should get the compensation paid as well, because otherwise what we're going to get is case dismissed, and then either somebody's going to start filing small claims actions, or every time somebody's going to stand up in court and say, now, judge, I want you to order them to pay the money back, and then they're going to start arguing about what we're discussing right now. So I do think that space, that gap in the bill now needs to get filled. I also think this is a matter that the Finance Committee who is perfectly capable of addressing, so I don't see any reason to not move the bill.
The other interesting question, because it'll follow me to finance, is to see if Senator Dunbar's question is an interesting question, to see if this turns into a positive fiscal note. So, all right, with that being said, I remove my objection. Is there any further objections? Seeing none, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill CS for Senate Bill, excuse me, the Senate CS for Senate Bill 168, Work Order 33 LS 1071/R, out of committee with individual recommendations, and attached and forthcoming fiscal notes.
Thank you. And seeing no further objection, the bill moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the document and pass the gavel.
I call Senate Resources Committee back to order. Next item on the agenda is reduced royalty on Cook Inlet oil and gas by the governor. This is Senate Bill 194. We are hearing public testimony on this bill today. So I want to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 194? Seeing no one, look to online for Senate Bill 194. And I'm seeing no one. So with that, I'll close public testimony on Senate Bill 194. I am setting an amendment deadline of Wednesday, March 27th at 5 p.m. for this bill. Next up is Senate Bill 175, Electronic Device Recycling by Senator Tobin. Again, we will be taking public testimony on this bill. I will open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? Please come forward, and if you would identify yourself for the record, 2 minutes to give us your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Satchel Pondolfino. I live in Homer, Alaska, and I work for the community nonprofit Cook Inlet Keeper. And I'm here to share a little bit about the electronics recycling program that Cook Inlet Keeper has facilitated since 2006. We are the only organization on the peninsula with a couple of partner supports creating the opportunity to recycle electronics. However, the program, due to our limited capacity, is primarily a once a year event. It's a 4-hour window where people in Soldotna, Seward, and Homer can go to the designated sites to drop off electronics. And we also partner with 3 villages across Kachemak Bay to remove electronics from the village of Port Graham, Nanwalek, and Soldovia. And since 2006, that program has successfully diverted over 600,000 pounds of electronics. The program typically costs between a low year would be $17,000, a high year would be $25,000, and most of that cost is in the recycling itself. We go through Central Recycling Services in Anchorage. And although the program is really successful and there's a lot of public participation, it's really a small drop in the bucket. I have a keen eye for looking out in our transfer site in Homer for electronics to see when I drop off my own waste. And there's always electronics there because there is only one day a year where people can responsibly recycle it. And electronics are responsible for 70% of the toxic leachate that comes out of our landfills, and that's particularly magnified in our rural communities with unlined landfills. So it is a huge need, and we're really supportive of this bill. If there was a funding source that could create stability in the program where we could hire up capacity and offer more than once a year opportunity, we would absolutely take advantage of it. We have talked with the Kenai Peninsula Borough Landfill Solid Waste Department, and their feelings are that they have no capacity to facilitate a program on their own. That's all right. And we would love to partner with them if this funding were to come through. So, yeah, I can answer any questions about what the logistics of this program. It's largely volunteer supported. We work with 6 transportation entities. Some of that is donated. Some of that we pay for. And there's a lot of logistics to get it out of these small places in Alaska. But it's really valuable. Our landfills are small. And our water is precious. So,
great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Senator Kosa.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for being here today. I did have a question because we did receive some testimony, written testimony from a group called the Consumer Technology Association out of Virginia. And they had some concerns I'd like you to address. Their overall concern had to do with the additional expense that they think would be incurred by this, and you sort of mentioned how maybe especially in remote parts it's not going to be as huge an expense. Can you sort of, do you have any comments to what they said?
I haven't read that testimony, so I'm not clear what the expense they're referring to. I can tell you that almost all of our expense, or at least $10,000 of our expense, is directly to Central Recycling Services in Anchorage, who then takes care of all the backhauling and gets our electronics to Vancouver, Washington, where it then gets taken apart and dispersed from there. But these small villages, they're going to have transportation expenses, and we've been able to work with different transportation companies, including Weaver Brothers and Tote, who are really generous and write it in as their charity programs each year. But I don't know what this is offering a new funding stream. So it's going to be about creating an economy of scale so that we can work with these transportation agencies and the recycling itself to get better prices.
Follow up, Senator Kosa.
Yeah, just to follow up, Madam Chair, thank you again for being here. It isn't very specific about what they anticipate these additional expenses could be, but can you just explain a little bit more about backhaul and how that works? And, you know, I guess if a barge shipping things in comes in, drops stuff off, has an empty barge, where does that go? And just sort of the opportunities for backhaul.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Pondofilo?
Pandolfino. I actually would probably defer to Louis to talk about backhaul. Cook Inlet Keeper is organizing all of the logistics from the bottom of the peninsula to Anchorage. And then at that point, Central Recycling Services, who has been a really great partner, who I would recommend trying to get some perspective from, handles all the backhauling. But I know that there's been other agencies, maybe out of Nome, that have been doing extensive research on those opportunities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any further questions? Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I was wondering if we were able to speak with the staff. I mean, this is public testimony, so do you want to wait
Correct.
Till we close this?
Yes, we'll wait till we're done with public testimony.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great. We'll hold that question. Thank you for your testimony. All right. We have a number. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, we'll go to online. And online I have, looks like 10 people. So we'll start with Leland Rehard in Columbia, Missouri. You are online for questions only. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes. Are you testifying or questions only?
I was asked to be here for any questions that the committee may have concerning the bill. I was, you know, fortunate enough to give invited testimony, so I'm happy to address any questions that you may continue to have on this bill.
All right. Do you have a question, Senator Bishop? All right. We have a question from Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Rehard. Do you have, is the state of Missouri have a program like this in place?
Not as robust as the one that is being put forward here in Alaska. It is a similar program to what you might find in Washington, Oregon, Illinois, Maine, and some other states. Missouri is unfortunately not as good as the one that we are proposing in Alaska.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for being available for questions. I'm going to move on to public testimony. Kayla Burden is with Kowalk in Nome. Kayla, welcome to the committee. And if you would identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony in 2 minutes, please.
Sure. Hello, everybody. My name is Kayla Bordan. I am from Nome, Alaska, and I just called in to voice my support of this Bill 175 passing. It is important to me as a rural Alaskan because in Alaska, as the lady before me mentioned, a lot of our state's landfills are behind, meaning a lot of our landfills are unlined, understaffed, and a few are unlicensed. So with that having been said, when our rural communities produce e-waste, it can become problematic for their health as the e-waste leaches harmful chemicals into these unlined landfills, and eventually it leaches into subsistence resources as well as local water sources, and we see a lot of cancer and bad things like that happening from these type of things happening. So passing this bill would help ensure that these communities have a better opportunity for hauling out their e-waste and therefore help their communities landfill as well as their environmental and overall health. And yeah, I just wanted to voice my support for this bill passing. I'll keep it short and sweet, and that's about all from me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimonies, Mrs. Bordren. Next up, we have Lynn Zender in Anchorage. After Lynn will be Benny Biscoya in Nome. Welcome, Lynn. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Hi, my name is Lynn Zender. And I'm a resident of Anchorage, and I am also director of a 17-person small business that works in rural Alaska on waste issues and water quality, and also runs a job training program. I have a PhD in civil and environmental engineering, and about 85% of rural Alaska communities burn their waste as the most affordable and our practical means of keeping their landfill footprint from encroaching onto town or their subsistence river. Right now, most of them can't afford to operate an electronics backhaul program on their own and maintain the landfill. So e-waste accumulates quickly, so some or most of the e-waste ends up being burned through a dump fire or a burn box. And that's a major problem because, as the previous speakers mentioned, electronics are the primary, in some cases, only source of lead being burned in rural Alaska community waste streams. 3/4 of landfills are within 1 mile of town and 1/4 less than 1,250 feet. About half of communities smell burning smoke in town regularly, and about 15 to 20% smell it most days of the week. And we work with those communities, and I've talked with them firsthand. This includes children for which there is no safe lead level for lead, for which negative effects are not seen, and workers who are most exposed because of the proximity to the waste smoke. The life expectancy for an Alaska Native male baby born today is 64.6 years. That's similar to Haiti, Ghana, and Afghanistan. The leading cause of death now is cardiovascular disease for Alaska Natives, for which lead exposure is a known risk factor by several mechanisms, and it's the number two leading cause for the state as a whole. This bill will provide an option for rural Alaska that will cost us essentially nothing. But urban Alaska benefits as well, especially poor families and small businesses and schools. Urban landfills fail after their design life, and in fact, about half of Superfund sites are old municipal landfills. Why would we place lead there when we have a solution available that works for the 25 states, red and blue, that already have product stewardship, and not to mention countries? As an Anchorage resident, I have a closet of old electronics, which I realize I shouldn't, but that will cost me about $200 in recycling fees right now. I can afford it, regrettably.
Ms. Zender, your 2 minutes is up. If you could wrap up, please.
Oh, sorry. I can afford it, but with no local depot, I don't have the time to drive across the city during open hours. Many of my Fairview resident neighbors aren't so lucky and can't afford the fees at all, let alone drive across town. And a local depot could even provide a local job. And then as a business with 18 training laptops and devices for 17 people, we have to set aside several hundred dollars each year for recycling. And we have a much better uses for that money. So I just want to say that, and thank you very much. And I can also answer some of the questions related to backhaul and that piece if that's something people want.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Zender. Are there any questions for Ms. Zender? We'll go next then to Benny Piscoya in Nome. He will be followed by Denise Olin, also in Nome.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. This is Benny Piscoya. I live in Nome, Alaska. As an Alaska Native subsistence hunter, I was taught if you pack it in, you pack it out. Same concept with e-waste. In Nome, we have 13 surrounding villages. And with the company, we got Bering Air donating e-waste coming back to Nome, and we patch it up and send it out. This would be a great funding for the surrounding villages of Nome. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Piscoya. Next, we'll go to Denise Olin. She's also in Nome. She'll be followed by Carla Jensen in Pedro Bay. Denise, welcome.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Denise Olin. I grew up in Wales, which is outside of Nome, and I now live in Nome. I'm here voicing concerns for myself personally, although I do work for the same company, Coeric. I find the studies that have recently been done on microplastics in marine mammal stomachs and their muscle tissues to be extremely concerning, with 32 out of 33 seals having had plastic. If this is happening with plastic waste, then it just raises the question of what is going on with the e-waste that has not been hauled out of the communities in my area. I want to hold responsible those who are in the business of creating these products that go into any place at all. There is neurotoxin, lead and mercury bleed into the lands and waterways, which is very horrific thought, especially for people who live off the land, sea, and air. And that's all I have.
Great. Thank you very much, Denise, for your testimony. That takes us to Carla Jensen in Pedro Bay. After Carla, we'll hear from Ali Peck, who is in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Carla. If you would identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carla Jensen. I am a tribal member of the village of Teeter Bay, which is located on Lake Eliamna in southwest Alaska. I am also an employee of Zender Environmental. Today, I would like to bring attention to Senate Bill 175, which is the electronic device recycling. In this day and age, electronics have increased tremendously in our villages. Along with this increase comes the increase of all those who use electronic waste. When those products die, they end up in our landfills. Our landfills are usually online. The one here in Teeter Bay where I live is. And our waste usually has a window that is seasonal. For instance, we ship the majority of our waste out of our village by barge. Some goes by air, but the majority of it is barge. So during that time that it's sitting there waiting for shipment, it may wait a while because usually transportation costs are very high. And that in turn means that the e-waste is going to sit. And when it's sitting, it has the threat of leaking chemicals, which goes into our watershed, which, as we all know, water is life. It's very important, and we don't need that kind of stuff leaking. Senate Bill 175 would help us tremendously in this. Well, half the states in the lower 48, also Canada and some other countries, are already enjoying this program. I see no reason why Alaska has to be left out. Please give this bill careful consideration so we can move forward and help Alaska with this growing e-waste issue. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Carla. Next up is Ali Peck, Senior Manager, Environmental Policy, Consumer Technology Association in Washington. After Ali will be Amanda Tordahl in Nome. Welcome, Ms. Peck. Please give us your testimony. Time limit of 2 minutes, please.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Ali Peck. I'm with CTA. We oppose this bill. CTA represents the manufacturers and the retailers of consumer tech products, which are the target of this legislation. So we're a little bit surprised by this legislation, given e-waste is a rapidly declining problem. In fact, in terms of overall solid waste, it's actually the fastest declining product in the solid waste stream. In our written testimony, we have charts and links to US EPA data that cites this claim. And no state has mandated a new electronics recycling program in over a decade. There are 25 states that have one at the moment. This bill is, so our main objection actually is the way the bill is set up. So this bill is patterned after an electronics recycling program in Oregon, which is completely different geographically and from a recycling infrastructure standpoint. So we just don't think that this bill is good for Alaska because it's for Oregon, not for Alaska. This type of bill makes sense when there are extensive nonprofit collection networks and local government staff with experienced recycling coordinators. So this bill for Oregon was the result of 15 years of Oregon-specific experience that was crafted to fix their broken electronics program. Also, we would object to the notion that 100% of the responsibility be placed on the manufacturers of these products because the cost required to be incurred by the companies, it will either drive up prices or it could create major disincentive for manufacturers to sell their products in Alaska. So we suggest that, we have more conversations with legislators and figure out a better program and something that makes sense specifically for Alaska, we'd like to find a workable approach, but again, as we mentioned, electronics currently estimated to be 2% of the solid waste stream. There could be other things as well that should be focused on. So thank you for the opportunity to testify this evening. We have more detailed written testimony, which I will stand on, but open to questions if you guys have some.
Thank you, Ms. Peck. There is a question from Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have sort of two questions. The first is, do you have any sort of local affiliates that have or could work with the bill sponsor? I mean, I think that you have indicated that, weren't consulted, but of course you're, DC-based organization. Is there any logical local group that the bill sponsor could work with on this?
That's a good question. Specifically, CTA does not have anyone locally in Alaska, but we're willing to meet with you guys all and figure out a solution. I would say, like, the closest person to Alaska that is even working on one of these types of programs would be in the Washington State area. But again, I think it could be a collection of stakeholders that work to really massage this bill.
Brief follow-up,
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, this is sort of a separate question. You mentioned that e-waste is rapidly declining as a percentage of the waste that goes into our landfills. But I'm wondering how much familiarity you have with the rural unlined landfills in which, it's very difficult to get things out of them. And I'm wondering, do you have evidence that in the last 2-3 decades that significant amounts of e-waste have been pulled out, or does it continue to accumulate in these rural areas?
That's a good question. The data that we have comes from the EPA, Washington State, California, the state of Maine I recently saw, and a lot of that data is actually based on waste coming into the stream, so like the current waste that's being collected. So it's not looking at people going into old landfills and taking out the old electronics from like 15 or 20 years ago. But the data is saying that, the waste that's coming in today in 2024, of that waste, significantly less of that waste is e-waste compared to 2010.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And just for clarity, the abbreviation CTA stands for Consumer Technology Association. That's whom she's affiliated with, just for clarity. Senator Kawasaki, you had a question?
I do. Thank you for being online, Ms. Peck. We do have a letter from a Mr. Alcorn from CTA.
He's my boss.
Okay, good. The last paragraph of which talks about some of the excessive or unnecessary burdens that this legislation would place and some additional expenses. And I'm just curious, what exactly are those? Because it's unclear to me what those costs are.
Sure. So if we set up an extensive e-waste collection system across Alaska, there would be a lot of transportation costs, probably not pro bono, as the first testifier said. And it would become very expensive to haul like these products from rural communities across Alaska, and there might not be a bunch of e-waste in these small towns, yet we would be spending a lot of money to go and get them and then process them. And so those are the expenses that I guess you're probably referencing. And then expenses to set up the programs, have the coordinators. It would be a very, because Alaska is so large, it would become very expensive for the manufacturers to pay into. And so that's probably what he's looking at.
And just Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, just a separate question is just that you mentioned at the onset of your testimony that Oregon was not really the best suitable place because it recycles different and has different geographic profile. If there's another state with which you think might be better, that information I think would be helpful for the bill sponsor and for us as we refine the bill. So thank you.
Sure. Yeah, I'll touch base with Walter. He's the expert who's been doing this for 25 years. I would say it's probably difficult to honestly model it after any specific state, only because, as you guys probably know best, Alaska is not very similar to the rest of the 25 continental U.S. states that have this legislation. But I think there could possibly be some kind of solution worked out through stakeholder engagement.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Peck, for your testimony. We're going to move on now to Amanda Tordahl in Nome. After Amanda will be Nathan Baring from Fairbanks. Amanda, welcome. Give us your testimony after identifying yourself, please.
Thank you so much. My name is Amanda Tordahl, and I live in Nome, and I work for CWRIC. And I'm calling in support of Senate Bill 175, the electronic device recycling program to provide free electronics recycling for Alaskans. Currently, it takes a lot of work and a lot of funding from our regional organizations in combination with funding from grant programs to collect e-waste in our rural communities, package them up properly, and get them onto a backhaul barge or a backhaul flight to a place where they can be processed. So making a product stewardship program like this part of our state's law would be a more sustainable solution to reduce pollution and toxic electronics in our state. Also, adding this program into law would help provide resources needed for educating the public about how to recycle their electronics. As consumers, we're continuously buying new phones, new computers, new tablets, new televisions, et cetera, and it only makes sense to put a product stewardship program into place, especially when we consider the clean energy transition and the push to move us to cleaner electricity-powered appliances. Even some refrigerators are like smartphones nowadays and probably fall into the e-waste category now. Every year, there will continue to be more and more electronic waste generated, and the responsible recycling of these products should be supported by the manufacturers that make them, our state leadership, and not just our amazing, motivated community leaders and environmental champions out there. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Amanda. Next up is Nathan Baring in Fairbanks. He'll be followed by Vanessa Tabon in Nome. Nathan, welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nathan Baring, and I live in Fairbanks, and I do also work in Nome, Fork, Werick, and across the Bering Strait region. And I am testifying in strong support of House Bill 175 on its electronics recycling, creating Alaska's product stewardship law. In addition to what folks have said earlier, I want to just note that especially now with the hundreds of millions of dollars coming from both the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act that are entering our state, there's likely going to be a significant increase, I would imagine, in electronics-driven programs that are supporting our state. And to that end, it's time that we join states like Texas, Maine, and Missouri in properly including the costs of recycling in our product costs, so our electronics prices also subsidize our state programs and not just other states. I also wanted to address what I heard earlier from Senator Kawasaki's excellent question on the additional costs from the electronics trade group. My understanding is that the primary cost addition would be to the product cost, which I already understand exists currently to subsidize other states with similar product stewardship programs. So the benefit of including this also for Alaska would be to take the pressure off small rural governments to fund these recycling programs using taxpayer dollars and encouraging innovation in the private sector that would drive down the recycling costs given the shifted cost burden that the testifier from DC is trying to organizationally avoid. Given the health disparities in particular in our rural communities, I believe strongly that the recycling costs should be on producers and not small Alaskan consumers. Thank you so much for your testimony, or for my thanks for listening to me.
Thank you very much, Nathan, for your testimony. Moving on now to Vanessa Tabon in Nome. Welcome, Vanessa. Identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm currently calling in from Shishmaref, so if the line is a little fuzzy, just let me know. But my name is Vanessa Tabon. I also work for Quirk Inc. out of Nome, which is a nonprofit regional entity. But I have been working with Quirk in the recycling program that we hold there for the Bering Straits region, which does cover 15 communities, 20 tribes, and we have a great recycling program to get these items out of the rural landfills where they do have open burning and they do have unlined landfills. For me, I see this product stewardship bill 175 being a great asset for the state of Alaska. As Nathan has said, that we do, from my understanding, do already pay a cost when we buy our electronics that's already set in place. I don't see that would be a burden, but I would definitely like to see a product stewardship for the state of Alaska to take the cost overhead off of the local entities that are really trying to make sure that our rural communities and all communities across Alaska have good standing landfills that are non-toxic, that don't have health issues from burning, open burning of electronics that may cause cancer or other health issues or problems. You know, if we're all moving in the right direction, I see that this would be a great bill for the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa, for your testimony. That ends the list of people online. Is there, again, anyone else in the room wishing to testify? I will close public testimony. Online, we have Christina Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, DEC, Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, and also Louis Flora here in the room, staff to Senator Tobin. Mr. Flora, would you please come up? And we had some questions perhaps you could answer, or we have the Deputy Commissioner on the line as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Louis Flora, staff to Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. And I believe also Mr. Leland Rehard is still online for more detailed answers than I'll likely be able to give, but I'm here for questions.
Thank you. So one of the questions had to do with the backhaul. Senator Kawasaki?
Well, it was actually just more of a generalized question on how backhaul works, how that just the proposal would work if it were just generally, and especially in remote Alaska where things are, products are going out, products come back in, right? So can you maybe just talk us through that?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, if there is someone from Backhaul Alaska on the line, they could give you a much more detailed response than I could. But my understanding is there is community collection events organized in the community, and then they utilize connexes and other items that have been utilized to ship goods there. And the event I've been involved in directly is with the Cook Inlet Keeper. And that was volunteer effort, getting a landing craft over from Nanwalek. We got it to Homer and then had it load it partially by hand into a Connex, and that was then trucked up the road. But I think there's much more logistics that go into out in rural Alaska. And I know that Donlin has organized, I believe in your packet, there's a white paper, just a one-pager describing Donlin's effort to do backhaul for different parts of rural Alaska as well.
Was that substantial enough, Senator Kawasaki?
Or if there sounds like somebody else would be better to answer the question.
Sure. Mr. Flora, are you suggesting the Deputy Commissioner or the gentleman from Missouri?
The gentleman from Missouri has worked closely with Backhaul Alaska, and I think Lynn Zender as well is still on the line, but she could provide information.
All right. Mr. Leland Rehard, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here, Madam Chair.
Can you answer the question related to backhaul?
I will do my best, but as Mr. Flora said, Ms. Zender is definitely the best person to speak with. I know that this has been a major project for them, usually funded through grant funding. To be able to pull back to backhaul materials that would be hazardous in rural Alaska landfills and to get them out. They obviously can't serve every rural community with the resources they have. It's limited, and that was what drove them to look for a more sustainable solution and the reason why you see Senate Bill 175. I know that you can find information on their website about Backhaul Alaska and get a lot more great information about the work they've been doing for a long time.
All right. Ms. Zender, do you have anything to add related to backhaul?
Sure. So Louis explained it really well. So that's one example. Logistics really vary among from different communities and depending on different regions. So, you know, for some of the more typical off-road, smaller villages, you'll have a shipping container, they'll fill it with waste, and then during the summer, obviously not during the winter, it'll get barged out. And then other places, it may get barged out all the way to Washington, to Seattle, or it may get barged out to the hub and that can and then get consolidated. Other places, such as the Kuwerik region, they fly out their electronics to Nome, and then it gets consolidated there could be anywhere from one leg to say four different legs. The Lake and Penn communities, for example, actually need to go across the lake and then down a road and then over to Homer and then up to Anchorage.
Thank
you. Does that answer your question? But yeah, I could go on. But
all right. Further questions?
I have two questions.
Yes, Senator Bishop.
Thank you. I've got a question for Mr. Flora, and then I have a question for DEC. So my first question is, Mr. Flora, when you read the fiscal note, this bill establishes an electronic stewardship program where manufacturers of specific electronics sold in Alaska. So this bill, it's yet to be determined what those specific electronic items are. Am I correct?
Through the chair, co-chair Bishop, yes, that would be determined by the product manufacturers coming together under a clearinghouse and then working with the department and the advisory committee that's established in the bill to determine the product amount.
By follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up, Senator Bishop.
By year 2027, right?
I believe so.
Thank you. Okay. All right. So I'll just hold that thought because there's going to be a – I'm curious to see what the number is going to be if this became law on TVs and specific electronics. The second thing is this is for DEC, and this is just a general question to the Deputy Commissioner, Christina Carpenter. Are you online?
Ms. Carpenter?
Yes, are you able to hear?
Yes, we can hear you. So just a general question for me, notwithstanding the bill in front of us, but we've heard a lot about landfills and unlined landfills in rural Alaska. So what's the protocol for landfills? Is there a certain threshold in rural Alaska where you require a lined landfill depending upon village population, or can you help me with that? Because I'm just sitting here going, thinking to myself, why aren't all landfills lined if we're talking about water quality, irregardless of electronics?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We do have
Ms. Carpenter, could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, thank you. This is Christina Carpenter with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Chair Bishop, you were asking for the threshold for unlined landfills in rural communities. Is that correct?
Yeah, I just wondered what's your protocol for do we have lined landfills in rural Alaska, and if not, why? Or is it set by, you know, there's the question.
Yeah, thank you for that question. We do have protocols laid out in regulation. I know that it's based upon whether or not the facility is on the road system and the approximate quantity of waste that's received on an average day in those communities. And I would be happy to follow up with the committee on the specific requirements or the allowances for those landfills that are unlined that we refer to as Class 3 landfills.
That would be great, Ms. Carpenter. So if you could send that information to Co-Chair Bishop and myself, we will distribute it to committee members. Senator Dunbar, questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for the sponsor and then also the gentleman from Missouri, which sort of sounds like we're in Congress. Mr. Flora, I think this has already been sort of partially answered by the person from CTA that called in, because, you know, I asked who do they have here you could interface with? You know, who could you work with? Because it does impact the manufacturers. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to your efforts there. You know, we don't have many manufacturers in Alaska, unfortunately. So were you able to get a hold of any manufacturer or manufacturing associations to discuss this bill?
Through the chair, Louis Flora, staff to Senator Lukey Tobin. My understanding is the Solid Waste Alaska Task Force has briefly consulted with the CTA organization. I have not directly spoken with them or receive feedback until after the first hearing on the legislation. But I look forward to having conversations with them.
Very good. And then if I might, Madam Chair.
Yes, for Mr. Rayhard.
Mr. Rayhard, if you can speak to some of the practicality, and I know that this might have been touched on in your prior presentation, but can you describe for us again a little bit more detail about practically how this works in terms of collecting the fees from the manufacturers that would run this program? I mean, so we heard from the CTA rep that manufacturers might be hesitant to sell their goods in Alaska because it would become unprofitable, but I'm sort of wondering how that works. I mean, most Alaskans don't buy their goods from manufacturers. They buy them from retailers. So is it like Apple would say, no, Costco, we're not letting you sell our products in Alaska anymore? I mean, has that happened in other states that have done this? And then, again, sort of how practically do you collect the fees from the manufacturers when things are going through Walmart and Fred Meyer and other retailers?
Yes, great questions. On the first one, I am not aware of any state program creating a reason for a manufacturer to not sell their product in that state. That may have happened for a smaller manufacturer, but I'm not aware of any manufacturer not selling in a particular state because they have passed one of these programs. To your second question about how fees are collected, the way that this bill is written, when it's passed, manufacturers would need to register with the state and join what's called a clearinghouse here or many other programs called a producer responsibility organization, an organization that helps manufacturers basically accomplish and implement these programs. And they would pay into that organization based on their, in most places, it's based on their U.S. market share. So, for example, if I'm Samsung and I sell X number, X percentage of TVs in the U.S. market, that would be my percentage of the cost for recycling TVs in the Alaska program. The PRO would help figure out and budget and anticipate what those costs are and create those fees based at breaking up the cost of the program by the market share information for the U.S. That's how it works in many other programs, and that's what's proposed to help collect the fees from producers in a manner that they've determined fair in other states to pay for this program.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Very good. I see no other questions. Thank you very much, everyone, for your testimony. I see no one else online wishing to testify on this bill, so I close public testimony for Senate Bill 194. At this time, I'm setting an amendment deadline for Wednesday, March 27th at 5 p.m. The last item on our agenda today, did I just read the wrong? I beg your pardon. It was closing public testimony on Senate Bill 175. Pardon me, electronic device recycling, and the amendment deadline is the same, March 27th at 5 p.m. The next bill on our agenda today is Advanced Recycling and Facilities. This is a bill, House Bill 143 by House Resources. This is the second hearing of the bill, and I was going to invite, there's the bill sponsor's staff. I would invite Mr. Jepson to the table. We had some questions posed at the last hearing, mainly regarding the economics of this proposal. And I'm told that you have some answers to those questions. Mr. Jepson?
Yes, Co-Chair Giesel. For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. apologize, I'm a little out of breath. I had to run up here. Got here just at the last second, as you all saw. So I was proposed three separate questions from your staff, Julia, in sequential order. Would you like me to go through them? Then the question referenced by Senator Klayman is the second question on that list.
Yes, go through them in sequence.
Okay, thank you. So once again, I thank your staff, Julia, for putting together these timestamps. Saved me the pleasure of having to go back and watch the whole hearing. So thank you for that, Julia. So from Senator Dunbar at 4:46 p.m., he asked that if an entity knew they would be regulated at the same level as other solid waste entity requirements, would that mean they would not open a plant in Alaska? And the second part of the question was, what are the practical differences knowing that you would not be regulated as a manufacturer? So to answer the first portion, under current regulation, Senator Dunbar, through the chair, it would appear that an advanced recycling facility could operate in Alaska, and the DEC believes that they could permit one. But the reality is these are extremely high capital intensive projects with multiple decade timelines, life cycles, and that sort of investment just isn't going to flow if the regulations and statutes aren't clearly defined. So to answer the question in short, it is highly, highly unlikely that if we don't clarify the regulations and the statutes that we would see that sort of economic investment into the state from an advanced recycling facility. For the second question regarding the practical differences of how solid waste is regulated compared to manufacturing materials, I believe that we have the Deputy Commissioner of the DC, Christina Carpenter, on the line is the more appropriate person to answer that. But before we pivot to Deputy Commissioner Carpenter, I just want to add a little context as to the broader point of the question regarding the basis of why the plastic feedstock should be regulated differently than solid waste. So the solid waste is essentially a completely different product than the plastic feedstock. The solid waste is usually you pay somebody to take it off your hands, whereas the plastic feedstock has already gone through a sorting and cleaning process, and at that point in time it's been removed from the waste stream, and now it's actually a manufacturing input. So I think the best analogy for this would be car manufacturers who use recycled metals. So at one point in time, the metal has been part of the waste stream, and it's sorted and cleaned. And by the time it arrives at car manufacturing facilities, it's not considered solid waste. So advanced recycling facilities, in a similar way, take plastic that's been removed from the waste stream and return it back as an input product for a manufacturing process. And so at the end of the day, even if there were no benefits or differences between plastic feedstocks and solid waste, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to regulate them differently because they're fundamentally different products. And with that, I'd like to invite DC Christina Carpenter to speak to the regulation differences between manufacturing products and solid waste. Thank you, Co-Chair.
Ms. Carpenter? Did you hear the question?
Yeah, this is Christina Carpenter with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Can you please repeat that question?
Mr. Jepson, would you repeat the question, please?
Co-Chair Giesel, yes. The question is, what are the practical differences between regulating an advanced recycling facility as a manufacturer compared to regulating them as a solid waste facility? And likewise, regulating the input material as plastic feedstock as compared to solid waste.
Ms. Carpenter?
Thank you. Yes. So right now, we currently would not differentiate that plastic feedstock from any other solid waste in a solid waste facility. The department believes that we have the statutory authority to regulate this industry, and it just provides clarity to industry about the manufacturing requirements for air and wastewater permit requirements.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar, does that answer the question that you posed at the last hearing?
Unfortunately, it does not, Madam Chair. And so again, I set aside whether or not these should be considered manufacturing inputs versus solid waste. I mean, you just said that this clarifies for them the air and wastewater requirements. Are there different air and wastewater requirements between treating this facility as a solid waste facility versus treating this facility as a manufacturing facility? And if there are, what are the differences?
Ms. Carpenter?
Yeah, this is Christina Carpenter for the record. Through the chair, I can follow up with the committee on that, on Senator Dunbar's question.
Great, thank you. If you could send those answers to the co-chairs, Senator Bishop and myself, the co-chairs. Mr. Jepson, you have another question you were going to answer.
Yes. The second question was from Senator Klayman at 4:58 p.m., requesting a detailed economic analysis on advanced recycling and what it looks like in the big picture. So as we stated in the bill presentation, advanced recycling is already a multi-billion dollar industry throughout the world. I have some numbers on that. There's roughly $17.5 billion currently in the advanced recycling industry throughout the world. In the U.S., there's 14 projects that are currently planned or operating. It's a little difficult to try and estimate what the exact project economics are. Many of these facilities take 5 to 10 years to plan. There's a long feasibility study process, and the economics vary widely based on the scope, the location, and other factors that you find common in different manufacturing industries. So there is also a power question, and we can get into that. I think I'm getting ahead of myself, Senator Klayman, through the chair. So if that answers your question, or if you have any follow-up.
You wish to follow up, Senator Klayman?
I have follow-up. It doesn't really answer the question. I mean, I work on the sense that what we're hearing about, say, in Louisiana, that a company is putting a certain amount of capital into building a plant, they're not building that because they're going to lose money doing it. And the fact that people are doing it, that's not analysis. Analysis is what's the cost? What's the cost to get oil out of the ground and make plastic using raw material as opposed to making new plastic for manufacturing from recycled material? There's a detailed economic analysis that would walk us through that. And just telling me that there's people doing it, that's not the analysis. It just that tells me those people have done that analysis. I'd like to see the analysis.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, I know I'm aware of life cycle assessment analysis comparing emissions. We can look more into if there are project economics and financials that are disclosed from private companies. I believe that might be a little difficult to find, but we can look into some financial disclosure documents.
That would be great. And you can send the answers telephonically to the two co-chairs. Good. Further questions?
There is one more co-chair, Giesel. Regarding from Senator Kaufman regarding how many megawatts it would take to power a medium-sized hospital. For a little bit of context on this question, our invited testifier compared the amount of energy usage from an advanced recycling facility to comparable to a medium-sized hospital. I went back and I found that life cycle assessment, and there was no numbers linked to it. It just put that reference out there. So I looked into the energy usage of a medium-sized hospital to provide a little bit of estimated context. Once again, this can vary significantly based on location, design, range of services, operational hours, other operational factors. But a medium-sized hospital is generally defined as having between 100 to 499 beds. They consume a considerable amount of energy, at least for a commercial property, as they operate 24/7. According to data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration, hospitals are among the most energy-intensive commercial buildings. I highlight commercial because manufacturing buildings are much more energy-intensive than commercial buildings. So in the grand scheme of things, this being a manufacturing facility is almost always going to be a very significantly energy-intensive operation compared to a commercial facility. And the specific energy usage can be expressed in terms of kilowatt hours per square foot per year. For hospitals, this ranges from roughly 150 kilowatt hours to 250 kilowatt hours. So for a rough estimate, based on that 100 to 499 bed estimate and 200 kilowatt hours per square foot annually, we can see a medium-sized hospital would be roughly 200,000 square foot. And at that average of 200 kilowatt hours, we come out to 40 million kilowatt hours per year. Put that in megawatts to add a little context. That would be 40,000 megawatt hours. The state of Alaska consumes roughly 6 million megawatt hours. So that one facility based on medium-sized hospital or hypothetical medium-sized hospital would come out to 0.7% of the current energy that we use annually.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Jepson. I am going to open public testimony on this bill at this time. I have one person signed up, and that's Patrick Simpson with the Alaska Plastic Recovery in Anchorage. Mr. Simpson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and give us your public testimony. I am allotting 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Patrick Simpson. I'm with Alaska Plastics Recovery. I'm calling to you today from Anchorage, Alaska. Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak today. I represent Alaska Plastic Recovery, an Alaska company dedicated to mechanically transforming plastic waste into recycled plastic lumber, which we proudly call Grizzly Wood. Our product is a testament to the power of innovation and recycling, turning high-density polyethylene, low-density polyethylene, and polypropylene into durable, environmentally friendly construction materials. This process not only gives plastic waste a new life, but also prevents it from ending up in our landfills. I'm here to express my strong support for House Bill 143, which recently passed the House of Representatives. This bill is a crucial step forward in promoting advanced recycling technologies in Alaska. By clarifying environmental rules for advanced recycling facilities, H.R. 143 opens the door for companies like mine to innovate and expand, turning more plastic into valuable resources. The importance of this bill cannot be overstated. Less than 10% of plastic waste is currently recycled into new products globally. Advanced recycling facilities like the ones H.R. 143 seeks to support have the potential to significantly increase this percentage. These facilities use high heat or chemicals to break down plastic garbage into raw materials, which can then be used to create new plastic products. And this process is key to reducing the amount of plastic waste that ends up in our environment. However, we understand that there are environmental concerns associated with advanced recycling, including potential chemical pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. We believe that with proper regulation and oversight, these challenges can be addressed effectively. Our company is committed to sustainable practices and is ready to work with lawmakers, environmental groups, and the community to ensure that advanced recycling contributes positively to Alaska's environmental goals. In conclusion, I urge the committee to support the passage of H.R. 143. Alaska Plastic Recovery, along with other stakeholders in the recycling industry, is ready to support this bill's implementation and address any concerns that may arise. Together, we can make Alaska a model for sustainable waste management and environmental stewardship. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Simpson. Senator Bishop, the co-chair, has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Simpson, do you have an estimate on how many tons of plastic are available for, under this bill for recycling?
I do. If you give me a moment, or I could send that to you offline. I recently gave a presentation at the Innovation Summit in Juneau, and I did that estimate. Those numbers aren't right in front of me, but I can send you that presentation, which included a summary of those numbers.
Mr. Simpson, you can send that information to the two co-chairs. We'll distribute it to the committee. Senator Klayman has a question.
So I just want to make sure I understand. You have a company here in Alaska today that is actually manufacturing plastics using recycled materials.
That is correct.
Follow up?
Further questions, Senator Klayman?
And are you getting the plastic materials from here in Alaska?
All of it comes from Alaska. And forgive me for using improper protocol. So, all of the material comes from Alaska. We get it from three sources, marine debris from beaches. We take plastic ocean waste. We have a post-consumer recycling program where we pull plastics in from people that are recycling their plastics. And we get a large amount of plastic from industrial sources such as Hillcorp on the North Slope and freight companies, which have a tremendous amount of film plastic.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman?
Hopefully the last one. And are you making material? I think of it as Trex, the stuff that people get that basically looks like wood but really isn't. Is that mostly what you're manufacturing? Are you manufacturing other things?
No, you're correct. It's very Trex-like. It is the same properties as Trex. Trex is all high-density polyethylene. We mix polypropylene in, but we have the same strength characteristics. And we make 2x4s, 2x6s, 4x4s, 6x8s. We can make other dimensional lumbers as the market demands.
Thank you.
Senator Dunbar, a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Simpson, for your testimony. So I think you said that your process is mechanical. Does that mean you don't use, you know, the kind of chemicals envisioned here or the high heat envisioned here? And then my second question is sort of what changes for you if this bill passes? You know, I still don't have a clear sense of sort of, you're already doing this great thing in this business under our current system. So I'm trying to understand how the world will change if we were to pass this.
Well, the short answer is there's a lot of plastics I'm unable to use. There's polyvinyl chloride, PVC, which is a number three resin type. The styrofoam is a number six, I believe. Those would be processed using this pyrolytic conversion process, the advanced recycling process that you're looking at now. Also, there are plastics that I get that are far too degraded to be used for recycled plastic lumber. In particular, some of those plastics that come off the beach. But the process that is being described by advanced recycling would work with those plastics, and we would be able to reuse that plastic where I would have to probably take it to a landfill because it's too far degraded.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki, question?
Just a follow-up on that question that you mentioned, you're not able to use like the polyethylene or the submarine debris. What's preventing you from doing that? Is it the technology, or is there some other thing that DEC requires of you, like air permits?
It's not a permit issue. It's the plastic, when it sits at the beach for an extended period of time, the UV, the sun breaks it down. And so it loses some of its mechanical properties, but some of its chemical properties are still there and can be taken advantage of with the advanced recycling process.
Follow-up?
So again, is it the technology that you don't have available to you now, but you would under this bill? I'm trying to get back to the original question, which was what does this bill do for you, since you're already doing a lot of it, it sounds like.
I am doing a lot of it. It gives me the opportunity, or another company the opportunity, to come in and by clarifying these regulations. So I don't want to close any doors as a businessman. I want to keep every door as wide open as I possibly can for the greatest opportunity for revenue. And so I believe that this bill gives us a greater opportunity in the plastics recycling industry in Alaska to generate more revenue.
All right. Did you have a question, Senator Kaufman? I couldn't tell. Oh, okay. Go ahead. We're running out of time.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank our testifier for the thoughtful energy consumption analysis. I thought that was a great job, and I just want to say thank you.
All right. Great. Senator Klayman, did you have another question?
I did have one or two follow-up after that. So if we have this is for Mr. Simpson. If we have this clarification that you're supporting, Is the investment in some of this technology something you could see doing with a business your size?
Not at my size, no. But I'm small. I'm starting out. I'm crawling now. I hope to walk soon and then run soon after that. At that point, then I would consider something similar to advanced recycling as part of my growth. But today, I'm focused on selling grizzly wood.
Follow-up?
So give me, and I don't, if this is confidential business secrets, you don't have to disclose them, but I'm just trying to get a gauge of if you're looking at investment in this kind of technology for your business, is this like a $250,000 to $500,000 investment, or is this a multi-million dollar investment to meaningfully get into more sophisticated recycling?
The investment would be in the millions of dollars to produce a facility that did the advanced recycling under consideration. The systems I'm using right now are in the $100,000 range.
Okay. And tell me again, then tell us the name again of your business and where you're based.
It's Alaska Plastics Recovery, and we have a mobile processing facility. We're currently located in Palmer, but we also processed plastic last summer in Soldotna, in Seward, and in Anchorage.
Thank you.
All right. I have no one else online wishing to give public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 143? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. Mr. Jepson?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, co-chair of Giesel. I just wanted just a quick 1 or 2 minute closing here to answer Senator Kawasaki's question regarding how this would help recycling businesses in the state today. There's 7 different types of plastics. Mechanical recycling can only recycle types 1 and 2. And that is not a technology limitation. That's just a physical limitation. You can't mechanically recycle those other types of plastic. So you need advanced recycling to be able to recycle the whole gambit of plastics. Most of them are just ending up in landfills currently. And then once again, to follow up with Senator Klayman through the chair, and touch on that number that Mr. Simpson provided us, about $2 million. That there's a wide range. They can go from a couple million to, as Representative McKay stated last time, hundreds of millions to over $1 billion for the facilities based on volume. And we will continue looking into some financial analyses of the different facilities based on scale. Thank you.
Great. I see no further questions or comments. So at this point, I'm going to set House Bill 143 aside. I'm setting an amendment deadline for this bill for Wednesday, March 27th at 5 p.m. This concludes our meeting today. Our next meeting on Friday has been canceled, meaning that our next meeting will be Monday, March 25th at 3:30 p.m. At this time, the meeting will be adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:58 p.m.